You are listening to Covenant Eyes Radio, helping you to stay safe and pure online. Cyber ethics is a major topic in the information age, but Daniel Lohrman, Chief Technology Officer for the state of Michigan, prefers to emphasize the need for what he calls virtual integrity. He wants to help people get to the heart of moral behavior in the online world. Today we are playing a presentation by Mr. Lohrman, recorded on January 16th at the Center for Ethics and Public Life at Luther College in Decorah, Iowa. Mr. Lohrman talks about the importance of applying Christian ethics to online and offline life.
So, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Søren Steding, and I'm an associate professor of German here at the college. In his 1636 sonnet, Tears of the Fatherland, German poet Andreas Gryphius described in unusual detail the carnage of the 30-year war, which at that time would still go on for another 12 years. He talks about the bombing of cities, about the rape going on, the blood running like water through the streets, and rivers filled with the bodies of the slain. But at the very end, he talks about what is even worse than all this violence and bloodshed, and that is that people are losing their faith, and through the sin and this despair, they are losing their immortal souls. While the internet is far from being a battlefield like Europe was during that lasting conflict, we might easily overlook, when talking about identity theft and cyberbullying and cyber espionage and spam or hacker attacks on computer servers, that everyone who enters the net is also in danger of losing something that is much more valuable than a credit card number or some computer files, and that is our own moral integrity. Daniel Lohrman experiences the dangers and temptations of the cyber world every day in his role as Michigan's Chief Technology Officer and Deputy Director of the Infrastructure Service Administration within the Michigan Department of Technology Management and Budget. Prior to this position, he served our country working for the National Security Agency and spent 7 years in England, first as a senior network engineer for Lockheed Martin, followed by being IT director for Mantech International at a US-UK military base. In his first book, Virtual Integrity, Faithfully Navigating the Brave New Web, published in 2008, Dan describes with deep understanding of the industry and of the human condition, as I think, how we are tempted into behavior online that we never would tolerate, sometimes even despise in the real world. He not only gives many examples of the dire consequences that online behavior can have in our lives, but also how virtual actions can get between us and our faith, and how virtual sins are sins nonetheless. He also provides guidance for a purposeful life online and ways that can help us build up and keep our virtual integrity. I'm very happy that with the help of the Center of Ethics and Public Life and the Paideia 2 office, I now can introduce Daniel Lohrman to you. He is here as part of the Paideia course Cyber Ethics that my colleague Ryan Jordy and I are teaching this J-term. And the title of his presentation today is Freedom and Responsibility, A Christian View on Cyber Ethics. Please welcome Daniel Lohrman.
Thank you very, very much, Dr. Steding. I really appreciate the opportunity to be here. It's really an honor to be at Luther College. And just want to say a special thank you to Ryan, Jordy, and also to Dr. Moeller and with your Center for Ethics and Public Life. I think it's really an outstanding model you have at Luther to have that center, and I really wish more universities and colleges had that as well. So I wanted to say a little bit of background. When I first was contacted by Dr. Steding, I Googled Luther University. So some of you know where that is. It's in Southern California, and it's very warm there right now. So I was thinking maybe I'd be, you know, seeing some sunshine, but no such luck. Actually, I discovered very quickly that it's actually in Iowa, And actually, I'm from Michigan, so I'm used to the snow and the cold weather. But it's really wonderful to be here with you this evening. I want to just start off by asking two questions. And the first question is this. How would you finish this sentence? The internet is fill in the blank. So briefly answer the question, what is the internet? How would you define the internet? Now, I've researched this topic and talked to a number of people, and some might start off by saying the internet is the greatest invention since the printing press. We can contact people anywhere in the globe. There are billions of bits being sent, actually trillions and millions of users around the globe. You say, hey, it's my new TV, it's my phone, it's my must-have mobile device. It provides cloud computing, and I can access data from anytime, anywhere. I tell my kids we're heading for the Dick Tracy watch, full-motion video, and you can use it at a very inexpensive price. Perhaps you would say the internet, cyberspace, really it's a wonderful tool. It's infrastructure. It's what brings together it's like glue. Brings together all the different technologies I use, whether it be Twitter, I use Facebook, I have quick access to sports and news. I use all kinds of different gadgets, my Christmas presents. The internet brings them all together. So that's what the internet is. It's infrastructure. It's glue. It's a wonderful tool. Or perhaps some of you would say, the internet is fun. It's how I dream. I dream of new things. The web offers global gaming, virtual worlds. I love to play Halo, World of Warcraft, Counter-Strike, or other games. My friends and I constantly find new interesting things to do online. In virtual reality, I can go to Second Life and visit places I only really can't afford to go to in person. But my avatar can go for me, and I can see Europe and China and all kinds of wonderful places, despite a tight budget. Or maybe you think the internet. The internet is how I learn. I can take classes in Michigan, living in Michigan, sitting in Michigan in my basement, and I can connect to courses in Arizona. I can access data very, very quickly using Google. PBS did a study, actually a program a few weeks back that we watched, looking at young people, perhaps some of you in this room do this, and looking at how you study and how you learn. And they say that typically you have math homework on one table, you're chatting with friends, downloading Facebook pictures, writing your term paper, and watching videos, and maybe football tonight, all at the same time. So we're multitasking, and the internet is how we do that. It's also saying, PBS was saying, it's changing the brains of people. So it's an interesting view of the internet. Or perhaps you're thinking cyberspace is new commerce. It's how I get my Christmas presents. I can buy things from Amazon.com, or I can go to Walmart.com. I send my Christmas presents. They wrap them for me, and they send them off. I can even shop for jobs online. Or others of you may say, the internet, I think, really, the internet is transformed ministry. My church, my nonprofit group, we raise money online. We can contact missionaries in other parts of the world. We can go and chat with people in the front lines that are learn about amazing stories in Africa or Vanuatu. I have a brother-in-law who's a missionary north of New Zealand in Vanuatu, and we learn and raise money for him over the internet. But perhaps others would change the tune and say, hold on a minute, Dan. Is the internet really only used for good? What about internet predators, child porn, plagiarism, identity theft, or other online crimes? Some are afraid of the internet and online banking. Others worry about Big Brother watching what they do. Perhaps those people would finish the sentence and say, the internet is evil. I know people who won't use the internet, not because they can't figure out the technology or know how to use the gadgets, but they won't use the internet because they're afraid of being tempted and they're afraid of their own ability to resist temptation. Or some of you may also think the internet is information overload. I use it too much. I'm always online. I can't stop. I'm addicted. It's true, I can talk to people online, but can I really trust those people? Are they really being honest with me? Are they being paid to say that? What's their real motive? Which blogs should I read and which ones shouldn't I? Who's telling the truth? Or when I Google something or research a topic, I get different answers and I don't know where to go to figure out who's telling me what I really need to know. I could go on and on. Some of my friends in Lansing would say, the internet is about e-government. I can renew my driver's licenses. All the politicians want us to be online, not in line. Almost every campaign you hear that phrase. Or cyberspace feeds my craving for sports and fantasy sports or the latest scores while I'm traveling. Or the internet, it takes up too much of my time. I can't seem to get that work-life balance thing going right. So what would I say the internet is? I propose this. The internet is an accelerator, like the gas pedal in your car. The World Wide Web is making almost everything you do go faster. While radio and TV played this role in the 20th century, the internet is swallowing both, offering podcasts, video on demand, messages that took months to deliver centuries ago can now be sent instantly anywhere in the globe. But in our brave new web, what is viral online today is often old news a week from now. Like a gas pedal, the internet, I believe, is benign. Not a force for good or evil, but both good and evil now wage their battles online in the 21st century. It's the newest battlefront. Just as the printing press vastly expanded the spread of ideas through books and enabled the Renaissance and the Reformation over 500 years ago, the World Wide Web is creating a new e-Renaissance in numerous areas. So as Americans, we start this new year, 2011, we worry about hot topics. We worry about unemployment. We worry about our local schools and are they teaching the right things, rising levels of debt, global warming, or maybe even WikiLeaks. And yet, unless you've been a victim of cybercrime or identity theft or you've written an e-book lately, you probably haven't thought very much about how cyberspace is impacting your life, unless you're in Dr. Seating's class talking about cyber ethics. Looking forward to that tomorrow. But the internet is impacting you in positive and negative ways. The internet both defines and reflects the culture we live in. Which leads me to my second question. Why should society care about cyber ethics? Before I answer that question, I want to provide a few very quick definitions for those who may not be in that class. Ethics are the rules or the standards that govern conduct. How do I live my life? What do I believe? What decisions I make? How do I take my beliefs and apply them into actions? Every one of us has ethics. Think of this. Think of what you ought to do. The ought is ethics. So if ethics are the study of behaviors or the conduct and how I believe and how that affects how I live, what are cyber ethics? Well, in cyberspace, we go online, we say, what's right and what's wrong online? What's allowed on your network? What do I actually do? What do I believe? But what do I actually do? Are your actions differing online than offline? I think this is a vital question in the 21st century because the norm, I believe, in many, many parts of America and the world is to have actually different standards. Frequently heard, well, the internet, it doesn't count the same. Or people act differently because they can be anonymous online and not necessarily be held accountable. Also, who do I trust online? Why? While many think cyberspace is separate or not relevant, the reality is that our offline and online lives are rapidly merging together as never before. So we use that in our lives. How many of you have a Facebook account? Probably everybody's hand goes up. So you share that with your friends and your family, and you connect with people, maybe relatives that you wouldn't have connected with otherwise, so that your real life, you're going to see them at Christmas, or you're going to see them an upcoming holiday or vacation. In academic terms, one person said this, ethics are something that you study and think about, or ethics can be a code of conduct that you follow and you live by. While some people may think ethics are relative, Einstein said this: relativity applies to physics, but not ethics. To get at the heart of ethics, we need to talk about what are your core values and your worldview. What impacts my life and my actions? Here at Luther, I want to say again, I really applaud the efforts of your college and taking ethics this term and looking at new ways of how it applies to each of you and even updating the course to look at latest texts. Therefore, the first answer is that society needs cyber ethics to inform, protect, and guide governments, businesses, and families and individuals. Now, cyber ethics is an important part and closely related to cybersecurity and internet privacy, but it really is a separate aspect as well. And I've seen this as I've traveled the globe. I've had an opportunity in the last few years to speak to audiences in South Africa and Moscow and different parts of the United States. And there's problems, you know, wherever you go and you talk to people about their lives and their online life and their use of the internet, they're all talking about the same kinds of issues. Like, it's kind of interesting. When I was in Moscow last year, last March, and yes, there was a translator, I don't speak Russian. And but we had a chart up on the wall that talked about the biggest number one country in spreading malware. And of course, most people would say, well, it's probably Russia, right? Well, actually, number one by Symantec and McAfee is actually the United States. So they all laughed and cheered and clapped when they saw that Russia was actually number three. So they're worried about us like we're worried about them. This is a global issue, global problem. And what are some of those issues we face? We talk about identity theft. We have sensitive information. We have scams, spam, Nigerian emails. In my job in government, I was the chief security officer for 7 years. Now I'm the chief technology officer. And one morning I came in. It was a summer morning. And, one of the first things I do, I have kind of a routine that I go through, and I will come in, you know, get my cup of coffee, read my email. And there was this little email that popped up. I was like, what's this? It said, email from your daughter. It was the title. And I'm like, email from my daughter? That's kind of cool. So I open it up, and it says, hey, Dad, check out this eTune. Very kind of crude, a couple of words misspelled. It's like, just like something my daughter might do, actually, you know. So so I'm thinking, well, this doesn't look right. So I forwarded it to our security experts in a restricted part of our operation in another part of the building. And they put it in a lab and they tested it out. Meanwhile, while they're testing it, all of a sudden we had all these hundreds of connections going off to China and Russia, and it was... And unsuspected connections, and it was downloading files, and like all kinds of lights and alarms started going off. And fortunately, our team was there and ready, and they blocked the connections. We found out that had you clicked on that link, we discovered this in a lab, what would happen is a keylogger, which would capture all your keystrokes, would be captured on each individual laptop or PC, that you would have... Two viruses would take over your computer, which would actually allow remote control from Russia or China, and actually a number of other sensitive files would be sent off. Fortunately, that was stopped. Didn't happen. We didn't lose any sensitive information. So we kind of joked. We nicknamed that area the Bat Cave, and so we say Batman came to the rescue. So in that case, we actually did have a happy ending, and no one lost their identity that day. But for many, many people at home, Batman never comes. And some of you may wonder, how does that happen in a world? Well, we had actually gotten to a point where we were blocking the very sophisticated bank-looking spams that had, you know, Fifth Third Bank and all the real, very, very, how many of you ever gotten an email like that? I know some of you probably, a few of your hands going up. But a bank, an email making it look like, hey, you know, we need this information from you. Send us this, send us that. If your bank's asking for information from you, be wary right away. Asking for your social security number and your name and your login account. But we had gotten so used to that, and we had been blocking that information that the bad guys had flipped it and had just with a few keystrokes and a few very, very well-placed characters had tricked a lot of people into clicking on that link. So what I'm trying to say to you is, this is a battle back and forth. You block one thing, they're going to do something else. You do this, they're going to come back with that. It's a game of cat and mouse back and forth online. I've seen the stereotypes of bad guys are external hackers, foreign governments, organized crime, or that geek kid down the street who's trying to hack into the school computers and get access to his information. One of the holiday season's top cybersecurity stories this year was a phony White House Christmas e-card that was opened by a number of U.S. state and foreign government workers. It installed malicious executable code to search the victim's PC for documents and sent them off to a server in Belarus. That just happened a few weeks ago. But there's a big fallacy in a lot of these kind of stories, and that is, number one, it's all just a technology issue. If we just had better technology, we'd be able to solve all these problems. I just need a better black box. But you have to remember, the bad guys have better technology too. It really is about people, process, and technology. So solving this issue, people, what are people trained? What are the activities they do? How do they think about it? Do they click? Don't they click? You know, do they stop and think before they click? The processes. You say, well, I know what to do. I know how to do this. I know how to protect myself. But do you do it over and over again? Is it a habit in your life? Is it a process? And then you also need technology. Core issue in a lot of this becomes the people issues and motivations and ethics, values, and beliefs. So how do schools, governments, and businesses respond to this explosion of cybercrime and these bad things that can happen online? Well, we issue policies, codes of conduct, block websites, we encrypt laptops, we force long passwords on people. We train people, and I'm all for training. We have a great website in Michigan called michigan.gov/cybersecurity, one word. A lot of other states use our training. And it walks you through, here's how you do this, here's how you do that. But the reality is, even when you train people, they still disobey the rules. You say, this is the line, guess what? Our natural reaction is to want to cross the line. So cyber ethics is not just for kids. Adults test the rules and the lines just as often as teenagers do. I've seen people run businesses at work, download porn, smarter people with computers, but they don't realize, the smarter people are with computers, a lot of times the more they try and beat the system. Because what happens is they think, guess what? I'm not going to get caught. I'm going to get around that. So we have the opposite side of, we think the bad guys aren't just the Russians or the Chinese. It's us. It's what we call in the business world the insider threat. Of course, this became very popular in the last few months with the whole WikiLeaks scandal, where an insider came into work making it sound like he's just listening to tunes. Meanwhile, he's downloading cables, and we probably, most of you, have followed that story and seen the information that was released. Little side note here, there's a difference in opinion when we talk about cyber ethics about, well, what should the role of government be? Should government be involved or not? 59% of voters say government's most important role is to protect the individual rights of the citizens. 24% believe a government's primary purpose is to ensure fairness and social justice, while just 10% say it's to manage the economy. But nearly half, 48% of American adults, see the government today as a threat to individual rights rather than the protector of those rights. So this plays out very well in a country like Australia, where they have a policy where they're saying they want to protect children. So we're going to block porn, we're going to block certain adult websites and other sites, hate sites and certain other sites that they think are dangerous. Other people say, and you can opt in, by the way. Adults can opt in to get it, but you have to opt in, not opt out. Kind of flipped from what we do in America. The question here is this. Some people say, hey, that's censorship. You're telling me what I can and can't do. You're stopping me from having freedom. You're stopping me from doing what I want. But others say, no, I'm protecting you. So there's a debate there. You point to a country like China, And a lot of people say, well, they're blocking free speech. They're blocking, they're filtering out stories about Tiananmen Square or other kinds of things. But if you talk to the Chinese, they'll tell you what? We're protecting our society. We're protecting the morals of society. There are different views on that. So closer to home, I want to give you the second reason to care about cyber ethics. And that is, it affects your personal life in major ways. Socrates said this, living a just life is its own reward. So how do cyber ethics differ from other moral decisions that each of us make every day? Many people have developed a different view of the cyber world as the real world, as I mentioned earlier. Some say cyberspace is fake, doesn't count the same. They say, well, I'm not really stealing because it's digital bits. They're not having to make books or produce them or make DVDs or distribute magazines via the mail. People who would never even consider stealing a pack of gum from Walmart. They wouldn't walk into Walmart and steal something like a piece of candy, put it in their jacket, and walk out. Have no problem whatsoever taking thousands of dollars worth of songs or movies and making copies and handing them out to their friends. So they have different views. Again, it's not just what the law says, because the law says that's illegal. Put in other terms, I identify with phrases like online integrity or virtual integrity better than cyber ethics. You say cyber ethics to some in society and they tune out. It's an academic thing. I don't really care about cyber ethics. But you say, do you care about your own integrity? Do you care about online life? And they're very interested. Integrity is what you do when no one else is watching, or doing what you say and saying what you do. Now, online, there are many opportunities to be anonymous, which can be a good thing. I'm not against anonymity. I think there are times when anonymity makes a lot of sense. But anonymity should never be used for evil. However, it also means that people display duplicity or have dual characters, have multiple online identities that may be a conflicting behavior. So someone says, I would never do that, but I'm not doing it. My avatar is going for me, and they're experiencing it, and they're going to report back to me what happened. Well, really, that's you, and you're going and you're doing that. So what does this look like? Deborah, a junior at a prestigious Ivy League university, downloads and submits someone else's research. Trevor, who's a respected businessman, plugs a pen drive into his work laptop. Within seconds, he's secretly viewing inappropriate material. April and Sarah, two 12-year-old girls from Kansas, are pretending to be 20-something Valley girls. They're chatting with this interesting 19-year-old hunk from Oregon in the picture. In reality, their online friend is a 43-year-old man who lives nearby. Abigail is a lonely mom, desperately missing her traveling husband. After stumbling across an old boyfriend online or catching up, has become frequent flirting. Well, each of these online interactions started in one part of cyberspace, they ended up in another. Initial good intentions somehow went astray. One by one, each will face serious consequences. Scenes like these are repeated millions of times each day online. So the questions we must ask regarding cyber ethics become, how do we encourage and enable the good, and at the same time discourage or disable the bad? Of course, there are very different opinions about what is good and what is bad. Some may think, for my ethics, I just follow the law. But most people rarely just follow the law, because then they say, well, I don't apply that to how I drive because the speed limit's 55 and I don't have any problem going 65. Or I just don't want to get caught. That's the issue. So it becomes a slippery slope. One ancient Chinese proverb goes like this. Sow a thought, reap an act. Sow an act, reap a habit. Sow a habit, reap a lifestyle. Sow a lifestyle, you reap your destiny. So it starts with our thoughts, become actions. Actions become habits. Habits become our lifestyle. And lifestyle becomes our destiny. So online life affects and reflects your character, your reputation, your job prospects, and your future. I see this every day with 50,000 state employees in Michigan, but I interact with businesses in Washington, other governments around the world, and I see the good, a lot of good that happens, a lot of opportunity in e-government, But I also see the bad. I've seen people disciplined. I've seen people lose their jobs, lose marriages, their families. And I've even seen people do jail time because of cyber ethics. Now, I don't want to just start, you know, in this computer security world. I was talking to Soren earlier. That's, some people say that's FUD, fear, uncertainty, and doubt, just scaring people. But I'll tell you, I do have a manager in, that I knew, good friend, who was very well respected, wife, two kids, manager over a large number of people in government. Very well respected, very well, you know, people listened to him, people went to him for advice. I was shocked one day when the FBI showed up and took him to jail for child pornography. I would have never expected that to happen. I talked to him before he was actually sentenced and went to jail. And he said, Dan, it started just this little activity, and it grew, and I couldn't control where it ended up. So I think a lot of times we kid ourselves and we think we can control, I'll just go over this line and this line and this line. They don't realize how actions become habits, become lifestyles. I've seen it happen. Which leads me to my third point. And this is where I believe our Christian faith can inform and connect with our online life. Good cyber ethics or online integrity is the right thing to do. A common assumption in America is that people will always act according to what they believe is in their best interest. And yet many know it is wrong to smoke and bad for their health, but they still do it. Or most support autonomy or everyone's ability to make their own decisions. Do we really know what's best for us? As a Christian, I believe the Bible is true and provides the best answers regarding how to live. Also believe that God cares about each of us and he cares about each of our activities. For example, Proverbs 10:9 says this, "The man of integrity walks securely, but he who takes crooked paths will be found out." Psalm 111 verse 10 says, "Fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. All who follow his precepts have good understanding." And you've probably heard those verses before. Martin Luther said this, "We are accustomed to admit freely that God is more powerful than we are, but not that he is wiser than we are. To be sure, we say that he is wiser, but when it comes down to a showdown, we do not want to act on what we say." So if integrity brings the best results, how can we apply this to our lives in the 21st century? Well, I believe that every generation is faced with a set of ethical issues. For example, Martin Luther, the Pilgrims, our founding fathers of this country in the Revolutionary War, people who fought world wars. We all have different issues that come up in our time. In the 21st century, we have the internet and the front lines, I believe, in our battle for good versus evil. Since this is where most of our thought lives begin many days. Christians can be a force for good or evil in society. There are many, many positives on the internet. I am a computer geek who loves using the internet, so I'm not saying get off. But there is a dark side to the net. Secular society even recognizes the dark side of the net. And people say, well, what we need many times is just we need more training, better training. If we just train people more, they would know what to do. But they forget that Darth Vader was well-trained. You can use those same tools for good or for evil, as I mentioned earlier. If you don't know the story of Darth Vader, Anakin Skywalker was the good Jedi Knight, the one who was defending the Empire in Star Wars, and he became the most evil adversary of all. So it starts with our thought life, our temptations that we face online, and we're tempted in subtle ways. We say, I'm not sinning. I'm not lying, I'm just protecting myself. I'm not cheating, I'm just downloading files. I'm not stealing, I'm just making copies of a disk. So we rename our actions in cyberspace. It can be very subtle. We had a good friend of one of my daughters, I have four children. one day on Facebook account. She had a thing. I'm looking for MS Publisher. Anybody got a copy of it? And her friend had purchased a copy and made copies and was giving them out. And some other friends were there, and they said, hey, I want a copy of that. So they handed it out to them as well. And my daughter confronted her on it, said, you know, that's not right. It's against the law. It's copyrighted material. She said, no, since we paid for the original disc, it's okay to go ahead and make copies and hand them out to all your friends. It's not true. So, number three, how can Christians balance freedom and responsibility? So, Galatians 5:18 says, but if you're led by the Spirit, you're not under the law. In The Freedom of the Christian Man, Luther said this, a Christian is a perfectly free lord of all, subject to none. A Christian is a perfectly dutiful servant of all, subject to all. So we are free. We are free, but freedom is not the right to do as one pleases, but the power and the capacity both to will and to do as one ought. There's that word ought again. True freedom is never freedom from responsibility, but responsibility not only for choice, but right choices. Freedom is an inner contentment with who we are as Christians and with what we have. And yet, we know, each of us, that we will fail. Sincere Christians will make mistakes and sin. We know there is forgiveness for online mistakes and the chance for a new beginning. While Christians are not justified by what we do, Martin Luther, grace alone, what we do is a direct result of what we truly believe about God. So what we do, say it again, is a direct result of what we really believe. We have a new motivation for living both online and offline. Now, Albert Einstein said this after World War II. When the Nazis came to power, I looked to the universities that prided themselves upon their intellectual freedom, and they failed me. I looked to the German press, which prided itself on the freedom of the press, and it failed me. Until at last, the churches stood alone, and that for which I once held very little regard earned my respect. So what would this philosophical view of freedom and responsibility, how does that work? What's a model for ethical action for us online? How does this, what does it look like? Well, I believe it's actually fairly simple, as I outline in the book. Number one, I think it's number one, surf your values. Know what you believe. Act on your convictions. Start with your offline values. I'm not telling you what your values should be. What are those values? Apply them to online life. Be informed, so you need to know what the laws say, like my daughter's friend. But know that cyberspace matters. Cyber ethics matter. Online actions lead to offline consequences for good or for evil. What does it profit a man to gain the whole world but lose his soul? Jesus said that. So growing up as a son of a Lutheran pastor, I was the youngest of seven kids in Maryland. Every year we would watch a movie in the gym. We had the big reel tapes. And the movie was Here I Stand, the story of Martin Luther. And I remember the intense look on his face. And I would always sit up there eating the popcorn, you know, a little boy sitting there. You can just picture it. Luther's famous line, I cannot and will not recant anything. For to go against conscience is neither right nor safe. Here I stand. I can do no other. So help me God. Amen. Acting on those biblical convictions, Luther changed the world. We can do the same today. The Bible says, be wise as serpents and innocent as doves. We must know the threats and the risks, but act on our convictions and on what your conscience is telling you is the right thing to do. Number two, be accountable. And a little side note here, accountability is for winners. When you say accountable to someone, a lot of, especially guys, I think, say accountability is for wimps. But if you really think about this, the best athletes, I played football in high school and college, The best quarterbacks get to have a quarterback coach. The best athletes are accountable. The best musicians, a lot of you are musicians, the best get to be accountable, and they are accountable. Why? Because they want to get better. They want to improve. The best employees at work get to have mentors. And they're accountable to the mentors, and they get better, and they grow. Great question is, are you accountable to someone? Are you accountable to someone? Whatever you're going for in life, are you growing and accountable in that area? I also suggest that you can do that online. My family, we use accountability software, not just antivirus software, security software, but accountability software. We get accountability reports. I see what our kids are doing. My wife even sees what I'm doing. We're trying to be transparent in our activities. I do believe it actually reduces temptation towards the dark side on the internet by being accountable. I actually had lunch about 3-4 years ago with John Stewart, who's the Cisco Corporation, Vice President and Chief Security Officer. We were in RSA out in California. The RSA conference is one of the biggest security conferences in the world, about 18,000 people. We were having lunch, talking about security war stories and hackers and different things. And I asked him, I said, what motivates Cisco Corporation? What motivates exemplary cyber ethics in your staff? And he said something to the effect, if technology staff, if our employees know they will be held accountable, they will usually act responsibly. I agree with John's point. The more you want to grow in your career, the more you should seek out someone who can hold you accountable for your actions. If you're accountable to our management, to our spouse, to our family, to our roommates, to those that we trust, we will enhance our careers and be less likely to go down the primrose path. I also think, and I hope to be able to discuss this tomorrow during the class, that there's a role for technology companies. And what I mean by that is people will generally want to do whatever is easiest. And I believe we need to make the right thing to do, the moral thing to do, the good thing to do, easier, and not the hard thing to do, not the immoral thing to do or the evil thing to do, easier. So people will usually take the path of least resistance. Make it easier to do the right thing with software, with the way you design the internet, the way that they're developing products. We could do a whole other lecture on that. We don't have time right now, but tomorrow we'll talk about this maybe a little bit. But this issue of software and technology encouraging the good. So lastly, I'm almost done here, about a couple minutes to go here. A final challenge, and that is for each of us. And I say this to myself as I say it to you. And that is to be a cyber ambassador for good. Whether you're at school, home, work, wherever you're at, wherever you're online, help those around you. There is no neutral position on ethics. You know, just a little side note here. I love the movie Amazing Grace, which is the story of William Wilberforce. If you get a chance to see that movie and you want to learn about ethics, he was a person, if you don't know who he is, research him in history. Because of him, the British Empire abolished the slave trade long before we did it here in America. In 1862, I believe, or after the Civil War in 1864, 1865. But William Wilberforce, his lifelong struggle in England as a member of Parliament was to abolish the slave trade. But in that story, it talks about how in the beginning, everyone was against him. Everyone was against him. It was not the easy thing to do. It was not the simple thing. It was a hard thing to do to stand up for what was right in the English Empire. And his actions changed the world. His actions changed the world. It's a great movie. I encourage you to see it. But the question I have for each of you is, what are you passionate about? And then and really going for that thing and be an ambassador for good in those areas. I'm also a big sports fan. I love sports analogies. Another way to say this is this. The best defense is a good offense. If you have the ball and you're a football fan, you know this. If you're on the field with your offense, the other team is not scoring points unless, of course, you throw an interception. But the reality is that you are on offense, it's the best defense. So 2 Corinthians 5:20 says this: we are Christ's ambassadors as though God was making his appeal through us. I've interviewed many cyber experts. They told me that they weren't fighting for the good guys on government or business networks or in the job they had. They would probably be bad guys and hackers. So the line for many people is very, very slim. It goes right down many people. But they also tell me by fighting for good, by doing the right thing, it keeps them out of trouble and actually makes them better employees and actually helps them in this ethical battle. So fight for good. If you're pushing for good, if you're fighting, how does that work out? It could be working with your church, working something here on campus, doing a positive cause. As you're doing that online, you are pushing the ethical battle. You're not falling to temptation and actually falling the other way towards the evil side. At the beginning of this lecture, I expressed my view that the internet is like an accelerator in your car. If this is true, then cyber ethics are the brakes. The brakes help us maneuver through tough online turns. They help us stop and think before we click. They help us understand how to reach our desired destination online, whatever it is, safely. And that's another tip I give in my book. But if you're very clear on where you're going, it oftentimes that is a very effective tool as well. So if cyber ethics are the brakes, then a teacher asked this question of their class. It was a true story. A teacher asked this question: why do we have brakes on a car? And a bunch of children were in the room, and they all raised their hands. And one person blurted out, to slow down, to stop the car. And the teacher smiled, stopped, and softly said, no. We need the brakes so that we can go faster without crashing. If we didn't have brakes on a car, we couldn't go fast. Think about that. Cyber ethics are important so that we can go fast. My hope and prayer tonight is that each of you and your families will be motivated and equipped to surf your values online with integrity.
You have been listening to this special presentation by Dan Lorman on Covenant Eyes Radio. Mr. Lorman is the author of Virtual Integrity: Faithfully Navigating the Brave New Web. You can read Dan's white papers and listen to more of his presentations on netsafetyresources.com. For more of our podcasts, visit us on iTunes or visit the Covenant Eyes blog, Breaking Free, at covenanteyes.com/blog.